Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things.
Oh, yeah. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for one, Solartopia. I am Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Welcome, welcome to the Wiz. We have our three spectacular guests and two amazing topics to talk about. We're going to start with election protection. We are headed into election, maybe, if we're lucky, and we are working overtime to protect it. There are all sorts of complications that are happening with the potential election of November 3rd, 2020. I am conducting convening a call every Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, some great people, two of whom are on the show today, about how we're going to protect the election. We've already had three 90-minute conversations. We're going to have another one this coming Monday. If you want to join us, email me at solartopia@gmail.com. It's Harvey Wasserman, solartopia@gmail.com. The convening goes from 5 p.m. Eastern Time to 6:30. Jennifer and Joel, who are on the show, are mainstays, and hopefully maybe Anne-Marie Lovins will join us. So we're going to talk about election protection for the first quarter hour. We have two, Jennifer Roberts. Jennifer, you're with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Good, good. And Joel Siegel, you are both in Charlotte, North Carolina, and you're going to talk to us about the organization you're setting up in North Carolina to protect the vote in the coming election. And then we're joined by the truly great Amory Lovins, the legend himself. Amory, you with us?
Yes.
Okay, so and Amory is in Snowmass, Colorado, and he votes in Colorado, and he also happens to be, just by happenstance, the great godfather of the Green Power Revolution. He's been with us at least since 1975, when we were together at a fair, the Tour Tomorrow Fair at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, which needs a new name, by the way, but that's another story. And in that gathering, what is it now, 45 years ago, Amory put forward a vision with William Hieronymus and others of a green-powered Earth, a world that could run entirely on renewable energy, and he has been the great guru, the master of the technology to proceed with renewable energy. And we're going to spend the bulk of today's show are talking about the renewable revolution, getting to Solartopia, a phrase I coined around, I think it was 2005, but the fair in 1975 was the inspiration for that, and Amory has been the man who has really carried the ball on the technical side. So this is inspired in part by the horrendous film that's come out, Planet of the Humans, which so erroneously puts down renewable energy. And I think, Amory, you have wisely avoided seeing that film. So we'll just talk straight about renewables. But before we get to that, I do want to talk a bit about election protection. And, Amory, we'll start with you. You vote in Colorado. How do you vote in Colorado?
By mail, like everybody else in Colorado.
So tell us exactly what happens. When election time comes around, what happens in your world?
You automatically receive a ballot in the mail. You fill it out. there's a privacy sleeve. You put it in, you stick it back in the envelope. The envelope is addressed to you, barcoded to you, and you sign it. And then when it goes back in, the election officials certify that indeed the signature matches what it should for that name and address, and then they count it.
What a concept. And now, when did you register to vote? You don't have to re-register every election, right?
No, not unless you want to change affiliation.
Oh, so you get a primary ballot as well then, and you have a party affiliation.
Yeah.
And so,
I think I'm an independent at the moment, but you get the ballot by mail for all elections, primary, general, local. I don't really miss going down to the fire station and waiting in line often in the snow if it's November, because we're up in the mountains.
I think
it's much, much more protective against fraud than most other approaches.
Right. So, but at some point you must have had me gone down there. When's the last time you went down to register to vote?
Oh, in person, probably about 5 years ago.
Right. That's probably when Colorado was switched over to all.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when we went to mail ballot. It was always an option, but now it's the standard method. You can still vote in person if you want to, and you can fill out the ballot and drop it in a sealed and video observed box in any nearby town, but otherwise you just stick it in the mail.
So are there widespread complaints about this system that people yell and scream about fraud, or is it generally pretty popular?
I've never heard or read complaints about it. I think everybody agrees it's cheaper and easier than the old in-person system. It is simpler than the old absentee ballot system, and you don't need to apply for it. I'm unaware of any suggestion that it has any material amount of fraud. Election fraud is very rare anyway, but particularly under this system.
Well, that Jennifer Roberts and Joel Siegel in North Carolina, that should make you green with envy.
we've had a different story in North Carolina, that's for sure.
Yeah, and what we're talking about now is what's going to happen in the fall, and this is serious stuff here. You and Joel Siegel, who's on the line, what are you trying to do in North Carolina? Now, we have a 5 p.m. call, and Amory, I hope you'll come on it, actually, to tell the people online, you know, everybody knows about vote by mail, but we have yet to have a person actually testify from Colorado. There are five states that have been doing vote by mail: Colorado, Utah, Nevada, Hawaii. No, Colorado, Utah, Hawaii, Oregon, and Washington. And mostly the story is the same as yours. People seem to love it. But in North Carolina, we got a different situation. So Joel Siegel and Jennifer Roberts, if you'll quickly tell us what's going on there, we can proceed.
Sure, I'll start and let Joel pick up because there's certainly enough to talk about. North Carolina, if folks remember, was the center of a huge election controversy and fraud, and one of the perpetrators of that is now in jail. But it was a situation, you know, we've had vote by mail. We call it absentee voting, and you can do it, you know, if you're in state and you're not able to get to the polls for whatever reason, for work or for disability, et cetera, you've been able to mail things in. Obviously, overseas workers who are diplomats and working with foreign companies but still voting in America because they're American citizens can have been able to do it as well. But what happened in our 9th congressional district was that we had people working for a certain campaign posing as poll workers going around to people's homes to collect ballots, but they were collecting them unsealed. And they were filling them out. And we also require two witnesses when you do an absentee ballot, which if you think about, if you live alone and it's during a time of a pandemic, it's pretty hard to figure out who the two people are that you might be able to get to sign your ballot. But what happened in this case of election fraud is that the same person signed as a witness to hundreds of ballots and clearly filled out those ballots and then sealed them and then dropped them off at the polling location. So we also have had numerous challenges with voter ID laws that thankfully have been struck down by our Supreme Court for their racist and partisan underpinnings. We've had intimidation at the polls by people coming and waving Confederate flags and shouting at people as they tried to vote. So the challenge with voting being free and fair and accessible is clearly visible here in North Carolina. And I know that there are other states that share these challenges. And what people don't realize is that we have to have people who are informed. We have to have educated voters and educated poll workers and poll watchers. When these kind of shenanigans go on. And the vote-by-mail process also, you know, we've heard concerns about whether the post office is going to still survive when we are mailing in ballots in October. And that's something that should concern all of us. It's been an institution of this country that has allowed people to do things like get Social Security checks and other things that keep them alive. And certainly voting is a basic democratic right. So we need to support our postal service for sure. You know, I was a county commissioner for several years, and I have even heard from our postal workers that they do things like check on the elderly. When, you know, they're going to the same house day after day, they know it's a single older person living alone, and they, you know, try to make sure that that person's still okay because they may not have someone else doing that. I mean, our postal workers are community workers. They are part of the fabric of our communities. And so that's just one thing I wanted to make sure I got in there that we are all advocating for as well. And I'll let Joel take it from there and talk about other things that we see going on that we need to be aware of and that we need to make sure folks around the country are aware of. Joel.
Thank you, Mayor Roberts.
Well, you're in Charlotte. I do want to emphasize that all my listeners here, everybody listening to the show, you just heard at the top of the hour a description of how voting should be done by Amory Lovins, who's in Snowmass, Colorado. And now we got, if you are in a state where everybody listening in, where there are challenges to the voting system, you need to join our call at 5 p.m. on Monday. Email me, solartopia@gmail.com, and then get involved. We need people in every county in this country to watch the upcoming election. So, Joel, now I want to remind people, Jennifer Roberts, who just spoke, is the former mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, and a truly great person, great activist. Joel, you're in that category as well. Tell us what's going on.
Well, first of all, I'm honored to be on your show, honored to be with Mayor Roberts, and Amory Lovins, who I read most of his books in college and graduate school, and Jennifer and I both work on clean energy, renewable energy. That's what we do full-time for NGO. So if it wasn't for Amory Lovins, I probably wouldn't be, you know, doing that work. And so thank you for, you know, what you've done with this revolution, the green revolution. What Jennifer and I have been working on, there was going to be a national conference. We were working with Jesse Jackson and Barbara Arnwine from Transformative Justice Coalition. We felt that in order for there to be a true, you know, grassroots coalition response to voter suppression, voter purging, not sufficient voter registration, that there needed to be a national summit to bring all the groups together who work on this. They do a great job, but they do work in their silos. And that conference got postponed. We were supposed to do it the first week of August. So that's the, you know, one thing that we both have been working on. The other thing we've been doing through the COVID-19 Emergency Response Group, which I'm, you know, proud to be the national director, work with you, Harvey. You're chairing the, you know, the voting rights part of this coalition. Is we have to make sure that two things happen. One, we better have a strategy, and we better have funding for vote by mail. Has to be done right. We need to make sure that we're registering people to vote. This is the most important election since, you know, in my lifetime. And one of the reasons why I'm working on this and Jennifer is, you know, we both work for nonpartisan organizations. I'm going to speak for myself. You can't vote green if you stay red. But let me repeat that again. You can't go green if you stay red. So the red states and the red Senate and the red president we have, the Republicans, don't want a green energy revolution. They want to stick with dirty fossil fuels. Hoax, right? It's a hoax, according to Trump. So if we're going to ever do anything on 100% clean, renewable energy, we've got about 10 years to do the bulk of it, according to Mark Jacobs and my colleague. We better have a Democratic House, Senate, and White House, and we're still going to have to push them. So we're very busy, but it's great work, and thanks for your leadership, Barb.
Joel and Jennifer, we have been talking in our calls, and Amory, you're now informed that we're attempting to establish statewide organizations county by county throughout the United States, especially in the swing states. So, Amory, I hope you won't be insulted, but we're not going to put a lot of effort into Colorado because you have already a good voting system. You do have a key Senate race, but Colorado is generally not considered a swing state in this election. And what you described in terms of how you vote is a dream that we wish was true for the entire United States. And, you know, Joel and Jennifer are working really hard under very challenging circumstances in North Carolina, which could, in fact, decide who the next president will be in a state that is has, shall we say, some extremely hostile territory. Is that fair to say, Joel and Jennifer?
Yeah, it's interesting, Harvey, because we actually have 400,000 more Democrats than Republicans registered in the state. But because we've had gerrymandering, we look very red. And this is another challenge that when people get districts drawn that make their voice they feel like they're not being heard, that suppresses, that's one more form of voter suppression. They feel like they don't have choices. And so it's so important in this census year. 2020 is a census year. It is vital and important that we do have people have their voices be heard and that they make sure they're registered and that they haven't been purged. It is just, we cannot emphasize that enough.
Right. So, and we're not sitting at, we're not just wringing our hands. We are working on this. Anybody who's interested, please email me immediately at solartopia@gmail.com and join our call on Monday. And so let's do that. Now, we do have, and Joel, thank you for being with us as well. You welcome both you and Jennifer to stay with us because Amory and I are going to talk about renewable energy. And at the end, Joel, I know you have a couple questions. But Amory Lovins, a new film has come out from a guy I've loved over the years, Michael Moore, challenging the power of renewable energy to transform our economy and to get us to a place of a green powered earth. And you have been, no one has been more formative in their thinking and in their organizing on this issue than you. So can you tell us, since, say, back in 1975, 45 years ago, what kind of progress has been made and what kind of progress we can expect in transforming our economy from a fossil nuclear-based to a renewable-based economy?
Well, we have made enormous progress in efficiency, and lately, but not initially, in renewables. In efficiency, we've saved over half the energy we would otherwise have used. And in fact, from 1975 till now, the cumulative energy we've saved by wringing more work out of it, about two-thirds technically, one-third through different composition of what we produce, those savings add up to about 28 times the renewable growth over the same period, which has been very commendable. It's roughly a doubling. efficiency doesn't get much respect because, of course, energy is invisible, and the energy you don't use is almost unimaginable. So very few people realize, for example, that worldwide, 2010 to 16, three-quarters of all the decarbonization in the world economy came from saving energy and only one-quarter from clean supplies. Now, renewables had a wonderful burst of activity in the 80s, which then largely hibernated. It kept going slowly despite federal hostility. And in the past decade, it's really come of age. And now, for the past 3 years, two-thirds of the world's added electric generating capacity has been renewable, if you don't count big hydro, or three-quarters if you do count it. Renewables will probably hit 30% of global electricity production this year, sped up by the pandemic, because only renewables are growing. All the fossil and nuclear production is shrinking and will probably not rebound to where it was. This, in turn, by the way, means that the capital flight out of fossil fuels is going to accelerate. We had peak coal in the world in 2013, peak car sales in 2017, peak oil consumption in 2018, and it's now quite plausible that we will have had peak fossil fuel consumption in 2019, which actually was the first year ever in a time of expansion that renewable electric production grew more than demand did, and therefore fossil fuel generation shrank. Now, of course, electricity is only one way to deliver energy. We also need to address heat and mobility. But it's interesting that the 2.5% market share of electric passenger cars in the world last year has actually rebounded. It was the same for March this year, and it may well have moved up in April. We'll get those numbers tomorrow. So electric cars market share the first quarter of this year, despite all the huge disruption to every kind of car sale, was 9.9% in Europe, 5.7% in China. And when you have car sales shrinking since 2017, and now electric cars taking more than all the previous growth rate, it's pretty clear that that part of oil demand is going down. But also, it will take several years or more for air travel to recover. And in flying, in trucks, in ships, it's the least efficient ones that get idled first because they cost the most to run, and then they will get culled and replaced by much more efficient ones. And this is one of the reasons that it's pretty plausible that fossil fuel use as a whole may never recover the level it had in 2019.
Well, as my mother used to say, from your lips to God's ears, we're talking with Amory Lovins. And Amory, I always want to have people know how to get a hold of you. How do people get a hold of you? You're at Rocky Mountain Institute. Where do they see your work?
Yeah, rmi.org. And my email address is ablovins@rmi.org, or they can just write outreach@rmi.org. There's over 1,000 free publications there on the energy revolution and all its glorious detail.
Yes, and you live at...
Go ahead.
You live in a house...
I'm just working on a paper this week on how to speed up the energy revolution by speeding the capital flight from fossil fuels. And the way to do that is to save energy or displace fossil fuels with renewables even a little bit faster, because investors want growth, not just size. And when they see these fast-growing challengers take all the growth out of the market, they pull their money out real fast from fossil fuels and put it into the new stuff. If the capital markets think you're in or headed for the toaster, they don't wait for the toast to get done before they decapitalize you and reinvest in your successors. So this is already well underway, and the more capital flees from the fossil fuel industries, the more they will lose political clout to defend their subsidies, block their competitors, and otherwise arrange things to their advantage by buying politicians. The trouble they'll have recruiting talent and retaining it. It's funny, the CEO of Saudi Aramco in late February last year was decrying what he thought was the false perception of faltering long-term demand prospects for oil, making it hard to finance and recruit in his industry. Of course, about a year later, a 3% drop in oil demand triggered a 50% drop in oil price, showing you how fragile the whole thing was.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, actually. And, you know, we've seen the same thing in the nuclear power industry, where there's a shortage of talent, shortage of people to operate these nuclear plants, and because a whole generation of students opted not to go into nuclear engineering, and now the virus is spreading through the nuclear power workforce to the extent that they have just stopped the refueling process at the Fermi nuclear plant in Detroit, because too many of the outside of Detroit, in Monroe, because too many of the workers are getting the virus and they can't proceed with the refueling process. This is a truly monumental moment.
We aren't needing that much electricity anymore because of the various lockdowns, and the renewables are happy to fill in for anywhere they're allowed to compete. Bloomberg just found that modern renewables like solar and wind are the cheapest bulk power source, unsubsidized, in 85% of the world's bulk electricity market, and soon in all of it. It's also, I think, important to understand that the average nuclear plant costs over 3 cents a kilowatt hour just to operate. That's the owner's out-of-pocket cost to run it that don't have to be paid if it doesn't run. Well, for that much, you could buy 2 or 3 kilowatt hours or more of energy efficiency to displace what the plant was doing and displace even more fossil fuel generation. So when these distressed plants that keep begging for huge subsidies from state taxpayers or ratepayers to stay open when they stop running, if you reinvest that capital in cheaper ways to do the same thing, efficiency and some renewables, you will end up saving more carbon than if you kept running the carbon-free nuclear plant. A lot of people realize that. Yeah.
So Amory, we're talking with Amory Lovins here.
Sensible to keep those plants running because they don't emit CO2. You'd actually save more CO2 by closing them and letting cheaper options compete for the same business.
Well, I think in the midst of this pandemic, with the huge drop in electric demand, we're going to see real crunch time at the nuclear power plants. I'm in California. My focus has been to shut Diablo Canyon. We have now found, well, the Pacific Gas and Electric, which owns Diablo Canyon and is in a second bankruptcy in the 21st century, and also set a record by being convicted of 85 federal felonies for involuntary manslaughter, having burned down Northern California there. They are losing, by their own admission, $3.44 million per day by continuing to operate Diablo Canyon. And this is...
They've done a deal, I believe, with the state and the environmental groups and the unions to close that plant in an orderly way and procure its replacement resources, which will almost certainly be efficiency and otherwise renewables, using California's auction process to get the best buys first. And it was PG&E that first agreed that closing that otherwise fairly well-running nuclear plant would help the grid work better. It would leave more room for renewables and help them produce more, and it would save the shareholders and the customers money. So this is a great example of exactly the kind of shift I'm talking about.
Right, and what we're trying to do in California now is to get it. That deal calls for Diablo to run through 24 and 25. We want it to shut in the fall. They have a refueling schedule at Unit 1. We don't think they're going to have the workforce to be able to do it. It takes 1,000 to 1,500 workers coming into the nuclear plant to refuel and repair. And, you know, we've seen confrontations already at Limerick in the nuclear plant outside of Philadelphia. And now, as I said, well, they've stopped construction on the only two reactors being built in the United States, at Vogtle in Georgia, because of the virus. And now they've stopped the refueling at Fermi in Monroe, Michigan. So this is something that's really happening in a big way to the nuclear power industry. We are desperately trying to keep Unit 1 at Diablo from being refueled. It's scheduled for October. And, you know, PG&E is in bankruptcy, and they're scheduled to come out of bankruptcy at the end of June, but they have no way to assess the capital value of Diablo Canyon. It hasn't been inspected in 15 years. And so this, Amory, is all up in the air. You may want to take a close look at what's happened in Diablo Canyon. We could use your help. Now, one of the things you mentioned here up front, which I find very interesting, is since we met in 75, you say that the primary change in energy consumption in terms of fossil nuclear consumption is through efficiency. Can you give us, and I would assume that includes LED lighting, but can you give us a better idea of the technical aspects of what has happened with efficiency in the last 45 years?
Well, let me give you a little idea that goes back most of that way. I'm talking to you from my house and indoor farm and office in Old Snowmass at 7,100 feet up in the Rockies near Aspen, where it used to go as low as minus 47 F on occasion. You can get frost on the 4th of July. We've had 39 days of continuous midwinter cloud, so not a very nice climate. But this building has no heating system, and it was a little cheaper to build that way because we subtracted more construction costs by leaving out the heating system than we paid extra for the super insulation and super windows and such that got rid of the heating system. And I then took the saved money plus a little more and invested in saving not just the 99% of the space heat, but also 99% of the water heating energy and 90% of the household electricity, which ran $5 a month for 4,000 square feet before we went solar. And let's see, now all of that stuff paid for itself up front with a 10-month payback from the energy savings. So I expect by sometime around now, it's paid for the building. And we keep, of course, putting in better technology all the time. So we had an old refrigerator and freezer for 32 years, handmade in California, that used respectively 8 and 15% the normal amount of electricity. We have a can you still hear me?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we're fine.
We have a Swiss cooking system that the California Energy Commission has just tested to be about 2.5 to 4 times more efficient than induction cooking. It's electric, but it's conduction. It has special pots and controls. My dishwasher from Sweden moves on to the next step or turns off whenever the water comes out clean from washing and rinsing rather than running on a clock, and that saves about 2/3 of the water and water heating energy. Computers and all electronics have become vastly more efficient. So data centers, which you read a lot of fake news about, have in some recent period gained about 65% in how much computing they did. They only used about 6% more energy because efficiency made up almost all the difference and continues to advance. Let me give you a little example that's less vivid, perhaps, than my banana farm in the middle of our house where we just harvested passive solar crop number 77 with no heating system. You know, half the world's electricity runs motors. Half the motor power runs pumps and fans. And if we just make the pipes and ducts fat, short, and straight instead of skinny, long, and crooked, just as simple as it sounds, the friction in those pipes and ducts goes down 80 or 90% or more. In fact, in my house, it went down 97% in some pipes we added. Well, that means that you need that much less pump and fan energy, and the pumps and fans can be that much smaller and therefore cheaper. Well, if everybody did this worldwide, you would end up saving about half the world's coal-fired electricity or a fifth of the world's total electricity, and you'd get your money back in typically less than a year in retrofitting old stuff or immediately in building new stuff. Why isn't this in any but one engineering textbook or any climate model or government study or industry forecast? Well, because it's not a technology. It's a design method. It's just like in my house, paying for super insulation and the like by getting rid of the heating system when you don't need that heat anymore. It's just like in the Empire State Building, largely paying for 38% energy savings by shrinking the cooling system. And in fact, there are other big building retrofits since then where, with good economics, we've been able to save 70% of the energy, largely paid for by shrinking the mechanical systems. So this is what we call integrative design, and it's a revolution in how we do efficiency. Of course, there's still a huge amount to be done with normal blocking and tackling, like weather stripping and insulation and better windows and lights and motors and appliances.
One question I wanted to ask you real quick. Amory, how significant is the LED transition from the compact fluorescent?
My earphone just ran out of battery, so I'll switch over to speaker. Is that okay?
Sure, go ahead, please.
Yeah. So integrative design makes the total energy saving potential several fold bigger than those conventional methods and also cheaper. In other words, it's more like renewables with what economists call increasing returns. That means the more you buy, the cheaper it gets. So you buy more, so it gets cheaper. And that's what causes the runaway growth that we've seen in renewables, and I'm hoping we can now get the same kind of runaway growth in efficiency, especially because integrative design actually can spread at the speed of Twitter and YouTube. If you just
smarter ways to lay out pipes, and you're a plumber or pipe fitter, you can go do that next day. You don't need to go back to school and learn new stuff. It's just so blindingly obvious once you see the picture that itself can infect virally, and we're trying to figure out how to help that kind of good idea spread.
Well, yeah, I guess you switched speakers here, Amy. Your sound quality is a little different. How significant and what's involved with the transition to LED? That's gotten a lot of play, and it seems to have really changed the entire market in terms of lighting. How clean and how good is LED lighting as compared to what we had before?
Well, it's terrific. My wife's an artist, and we have a lot of her and my photographic art around the house, and it's just gorgeously lit with entirely LEDs, 98% or so accurate color, nice warm color. You can dim it, so it does everything you want a light to do except burn out. these things will last for decades, so you're not up a ladder all the time. I think the reason they've grown so fast and we'll soon complete taking over about, well, ultimately an eighth of the world's electricity use, is that for about a decade, in about a decade, the LEDs got about 30 times more efficient, 20 times brighter, and 10 times cheaper. And that progress may not be quite as fast now, but it's certainly continuing very dramatically. This is what happens when the physicists and solid-state electronics wizards get together with great engineers to figure out better products. And of course, China jumped into mass production, so it all got as cheap as sneakers. And this is one of the more spectacular examples that is been forcing some of the big makers of compact fluorescent lamps, the previous revolution, out of that market. And practically everything's going to LED now. There are even LED streetlights that you can't see from below, but they beautifully light the landscape. And if you also use light-colored pavement, which has other advantages, you can see better and it looks better with about 1% the previous amount of street lighting energy.
Wow, 1%? That's astounding.
Not just a tenth, but even better than that, because they've so redesigned the optics to match the properties of the LED itself.
Well, you know, one of the first mass uses of electricity, in fact, the first, was the street lights in Cleveland, Ohio in the 1880s. Charles Brush, had a street lighting system that he put in, and when they turned it on, people actually fainted. That was in the 1880s,
yeah.
And so now you're talking about. So how significant worldwide is the energy savings today from LED lighting?
It's not yet up to saving an eighth of world electricity. That's where it will ultimately get to. And I haven't seen the recent numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were saving about 5%. I'm sure I can look it up. Evan Mills at Berkeley Lab has all those numbers posted.
Okay.
But there's another interesting implication of this. Think about the billion people who are off the grid, and many of them in households earning less than $2 a day. They are spending, last I looked, $38 billion a year on kerosene for lighting, so that they're getting a thousandth of the world's light, but they're spending, I think it's over 30% of the cost of lighting. These are the poorest people on Earth. Now, you can instead use an LED light, because it's so efficient, to run on a little handheld thing about a little bigger than a pack of cards, and it contains lithium batteries and smart control circuits. You can put it anywhere in your house, stick it on top of a Coke bottle, or hang it from the ceiling of your dwelling. And if you charge it up in the sun for a couple of hours a day, it can run all night. It can actually run 150 hours on a charge at lowest intensity, or about, I believe, 10 or 12 hours at the highest intensity. So now your daughters and sons can learn to read. And this has enormous effect on role of women, on population, on a lot of things that drive fair development in the world. Now think about it from the supply side, because these are customers that could never afford grid power, even if decades from now it somehow reached them. But meanwhile, there's probably a national utility in that same developing country that's trying to build power plants and grids to reach more people, especially in the peri-urban areas. Well, it turns out if you invest in a factory to make, say, LED lighting, rather than in power plants and grids to deliver more electricity to light in the old inefficient way, you'll use about 1,000 times less capital and you'll get it back 10 times faster. And that implies a 10,000-fold, in round numbers, reduction in the amount of capital used by the most capital-intensive sector, electricity, which now eats a quarter of the world's development capital. So you just came up with enormous leverage for national development. Whenever I tell this to finance ministers, they're always startled because they haven't heard that story before. But I think it's an important one, the capital leverage story, in how efficiency, especially in using electricity, can free up enormous investment to meet other needs of our societies. And just to cement this concept, at Berkeley Lab, Adam Fodka has a wonderful little group that has assembled a set of household appliances that are extremely efficient. So they have a cell phone charger, 3,000 lux of great LED lights, a powerful little cooling fan that sits on the table, a clock radio, and a 56-centimeter color television. The whole thing, all running at once, uses 27 watts. You know, like an old 25-watt light bulb.
And then, oh my God.
That in turn means that you can run the whole thing on a very small solar cell, kind of the size of a seat cushion. And that means, in turn, you can equip twice as many households per dollar with that whole setup as if you were just trying to provide solar cells to provide rural electrification with inefficient lights and appliances.
Well, let's talk about solar cells real quick. We're getting close on time. But this movie has done a number against solar cells. But I'm in Los Angeles, and we have a goal in Los Angeles of making L.A. totally solarized with rooftop solar primarily. How do you see that going? What's the future of photovoltaics?
Well, the biggest installation rate in the world, several states and cities, where it's not at all unusual to have 20 or 30-odd% of the houses already equipped with solar. In this country, the best predictor of who's going to put solar on the roof is whether their neighbors already did. In other words, it's a word-of-mouth phenomenon, and to some extent, perhaps keeping up with the Joneses.
Did your mic again shift? Amory, did you shift your mic again?
In making sure that our lower income neighbors have equal access to that technology, and California is one of the states that's paying good attention to how to do that financing so that the people most in need of the money savings and the reliability benefits of solar power can get their fair share of that, and it's not just for rich people. I've been doing solar power since the 80s on this house, and didn't have a power failure in, over a quarter century. We had one recently when a cell in our battery bank failed, because we don't actually store solar to use at night. That would lose some going in and out of the batteries, and we'd wear out the battery cycling them every day. So we either use or sell back at the same price all the solar electricity we make, which is a large surplus, and then we buy wind power from our co-op at night at a smaller amount of it. And it's kind of interesting when there's a power failure, which is not unusual up here in the mountains. But people run into power poles, stuff happens. And you hear on the radio that your area's blacked out, and you go outside and look, and sure enough, all your neighbor's lights are off, and then you come back in to listen some more or watch TV and see when your neighbor's lights will come back on.
I'm surprised all your neighbors that haven't come to you and have you set up their systems. You switched mics again, Amory. I don't know if...
Yeah, I'm sorry. For some reason, my phone keeps dropping out of speaker mode.
Yeah, I think next time we'll get you back on Zoom. I think the whole world's going to go to Zoom.
I'll wear hardwired earphones next time.
Okay.
For Zoom.
Joel Siegel, we're almost out of time, but Amory, again, tell people how to get a hold of you. We'll have you back on the show to do with Zoom next time, so the quality will be a little better. Joel Siegel, you're at RMI, Rocky Mountain Institute, right? RMI.org?
Yeah, RMI.org. Yeah, I moved last fall from being chief scientist to collaborating with the same people for the same purpose, but without the administrative responsibility, so I'm able to do even
more. We're done.
Creative stuff.
Amory, we're going to have you back. Joel Siegel, Jennifer Roberts.